Welcome to the Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and Podcast on Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 and 103.7, and streaming live at radiofreenashville.org.
I want to say that if you think that what's happening to Julian Assange has nothing to do with you, that you have no skin in this game, you are wrong.
That was attorney Ben Wisner, Edward Snowden's lead attorney. And you will hear more from Mr. Wisner and others as we talk Julian Assange, his pending extradition, and the desperate reasons we need to demand the Biden administration drop all charges. But first, my name is Jim Wolgamuth, and I'm here with fellow Vietnam veteran Harvey Bennett. We're members of Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace is an international organization of military veterans and allies whose collective efforts are to build a culture of peace, humanity, equality, and justice. Just go to veteransforpeace.org. This radio show and podcast is on stations across the country thanks to Pacifica Radio Network. We're also on SoundCloud, Anchor Podcasts, Spotify, and your phone podcast app. Just search Veterans for Peace. The Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and Radio Free Nashville are supported in part by you, the listener, because it is you that keeps Radio Free Nashville going. And as a result, this radio show is then picked up by the Pacifica Radio Network so that we are heard across the country. So if you think this is important, just go to radiofreenashville.org and click on the donate button and keep Harvey and I on the air in every time zone in the U.S. And you can also do the same thing if you support what we're trying to do at Veterans for Peace. Just go to veteransforpeace.org. Well, Harvey, you know, here we are with another show, and we're not going to talk about Gaza, but then again, we are. We're not going to talk about Ukraine. We're not going to talk about the climate or whatever. We haven't talked about this for a while, but it's thanks to Democracy Now! And The Intercept having a tribunal about Julian Assange.
Yeah, and it certainly is. Gaza is just another illustrative example of that, where journalists, you know, they're not being arrested and silenced. They're being killed. Israel has killed something like 65 Palestinian journalists in 2 months, and many of their families along with them.
And you don't do that unless you're targeting them. You don't kill 65 just by random.
No.
So Democracy Now! And The Intercept hosted a tribunal last weekend, which was extraordinary, which you can find on democracynow.org, because we do not have enough time to share it all with you, but because they had a lot of really good witnesses, but we want to give you at least a sense of what they talked about. And then, you know, it's another one of these shows, Harvey, where we got assignments for people where they need to call Congress, their congressperson, and say, tell Biden to tell the Justice Department to drop the charges on Julian Assange.
Is there any way to contact Executive Department?
Department of Justice would have a phone number.
I don't know that my Congress people would be much help.
Okay, Department comment line. They've got a comment line, which is 202-353-1555. 202-353-1555. And if you want to try this, the main switchboard is 202-514-2000. And that might be a place where you could dial in and then get the number to the Attorney General's office. You're not going to speak to the Attorney General, but you might get a staff person. That might be an option too. So once again, the audience has an assignment. Make a call. Let's try to get the charges dropped on Julian Assange. Why do we want to do that? Well, Amy Goodman and Ryan Grimm hosted this tribunal, and we wanted to share some of it with you. And so here's Amy Goodman.
Welcome you all to the Bel Marsh Tribunal, convened by the Progressive International and the Wau Holland Foundation, and brought to you live on democracynow.org's website, brought to you live at The Intercept's website and at Democracy Now!'s YouTube channel and beyond. Since its first sitting, the Bel Marsh Tribunal has convened the world's leading journalists, lawyers, and parliamentarians to provide testimony to the global threat to press freedom. Today, the Belmarsh Tribunal returns here to the National Press Club for its most urgent session as the extradition case against WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange is entering its final stage. In 2010, WikiLeaks came to this very hall in the National Press Club to premiere a video it called Collateral Murder, providing leaked evidence of U.S. war crimes that would forever change the trajectory of the war on terror and the U.S. government's repression of its critics. I remember that news conference that Julian Assange held so well. We interviewed him the next day on Democracy Now! As they revealed this video footage. It was video footage of a July 2007 attack by a U.S. Apache helicopter unit on an area of Baghdad called New Baghdad. There were more than a dozen men below the Apache helicopter. You can hear them laughing and cursing inside because it's the video, not of peace activists on the ground, but from inside the Apache helicopter. They request permission to open fire on this group of men. They get it, and they kill almost all of them. Two of them worked for Reuters. Reuters repeatedly asked for the videotape to see what happened to their colleagues. And it was only after Julian Assange and WikiLeaks released that video that they got a hold of it. Press freedom is really about the public's right to know. These courageous revelations, Julian Assange has been charged under a more than 100-year-old act, the 1917 Espionage Act, and faces a potential 175 years in prison. Today, Julian Assange is imprisoned at the high-security Belmarsh prison outside London, where he's been held for almost 5 years as he awaits the final verdict in extradition case, the prison after which this tribunal takes its name. The Belmarsh Tribunal, inspired from the Russell Sartre Tribunal of 1966, also known as the International War Crimes Tribunal, when representatives of 18 countries gathered to hear testimony of the war crimes committed by the United States against the people of Vietnam. That tribunal would turn its attention to Palestine in the years that followed, investigating the state of Israel for its violent occupation of the Palestinian territories and against the people of Palestine. Now, as war crimes multiply in Gaza and the West Bank, with over 17,000 people killed, over 60 Palestinian journalists killed in the past 2 months alone, the Belmarsh Tribunal takes forward the legacy of the Russell Sartre Tribunal to hear testimony on the threats to press freedom around the world. The Biden administration is preparing for Assange's extradition early next year, perhaps within the next few weeks. But the international pressure for his freedom is mounting. From presidents and prime ministers to Nobel Peace Prize winners, the international community is crying out against the injustice of Assange's prosecution and its implication for press freedom worldwide. Earlier this month, U.S. Congress members from both parties came together to demand that Attorney General Merrick Garland drop the charges against Julian Assange. Meanwhile, a high-level delegation from the Australian Parliament traveled to Washington, D.C. to push a similar demand in the name of their imprisoned citizen. Julian Assange is an Australian citizen. As yet, however, the Biden administration has not budged from its position. Assange could be extradited to the United States, possibly as early as January. That's why we're here today, to hear testimony from 13 of the world's leading journalists, lawyers, human rights defenders, on the past, the present, and the future of the fight for press freedom and the persecution of Julian Assange.
So there was Amy with an intro about the history of the Belmarsh Tribunal. Then Ryan Grimm actually dug deep into the charges.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you to everybody for coming out here today. Amy spoke eloquently about the way that the persecution of Assange is such a threat to press freedom. And I wanted to speak a little bit more specifically about the charges themselves. And I know that in some ways it can be naive to kind of even engage with the actual indictment, because what Amy described is what is actually at play here. But if he is extradited, it is going to have to go to court, and it will be worked out. And so the law does matter. And I wanted to speak about the charges kind of as an investigative journalist, somebody who I've seen myself as a competitor many times with Assange. He would always crush me. And I think that the animosity that you see from so many journalists toward him is not unrelated to that, that he has broken more big stories in his career, perhaps, than collectively the rest of journalism combined during the time that he's been a journalist. And I think that's very hard for other journalists to take. But so I want to talk about two specific elements of the indictment. First of all, there's a myth out there that he's being charged as a hacker and not for publishing. If you do a control F in the indictment for publishing, you will find it multiple times. It's just simply a lie. He is charged with publishing classified information. You often hear him described as a traitor, that there was some treason involved. I can't think of anything more absurd to charge somebody with who isn't an American citizen. The time that he was here in this room may be the only time he's been to the United States. If he's been here more than that, it's not much. So if you've barely ever even visited a country, how can you commit treason against it? The idea that I have committed treason against Saudi Arabia for reporting on them or the UAE is just as absurd. And they would love nothing more than to be able to make that the bar, so that if you're traveling anywhere around the world, you say, well, here are our laws around press freedom. He violated them. We're extraditing him to our country. So the two key points here. One is this idea that he asked, Chelsea Manning to go ahead and get information for him. For one, investigative journalists do this all the time. Like we are constantly getting leaks from sources, and then we'll say, what else do you have that can confirm this? What else do you have that can contextualize this? If what he did is illegal, then everything that every investigative journalist does when they're doing investigative journalism is illegal. And in one way, that is the goal of the indictment. The phrase that he used was even careful when he was chatting with Chelsea. He said, she said, this is mostly all I have. Do you want me to see if I can get anything else? He said, curious eyes never run dry in my experience. He was being careful about what he said. But even if he had said, yes, we want more, that's what journalists do. They want more information. The second key part is the way that they talk about how he offered to help Chelsea to break a hash that would give her anonymity as she was obtaining and providing this information. To me, that's no different than any journalist who tells a source, put a potted plant on this side of your door, and that will be a signal that we're going to meet in a parking garage. Put a potted plant on this side of the door, and it'll be a signal that we're not. That's back in the low-tech Watergate days. Today, it would be, contact me on Signal. Here's how you reach out to me so that you're going to be protected. It would also be describing you in a vague way in an article so that the authorities do not know who the source is. All of these things are basic source protection methods that he was engaged in with her. And to frame that as criminal activity, which the indictment does, is a direct threat to any journalism that is not just repeating, on the record statements from authorities, which is not an accident. And just I'll finish with the key point that that were exposed to the world by Chelsea Manning to Julian Assange, only two people have ever been punished for that, and that's Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange.
So there was the introduction from Amy and then Ryan Grimm getting more into the specifics. And you get your first taste of how dangerous this could be if Biden goes ahead with it. They had 13 speakers, and we're not going to get to nearly all of them, but we wanted to give you a taste of just what this is about. So,
our first witness today at the Belmarsh Tribunal is Ewan McCaskill, internationally renowned journalist and defense and intelligence correspondent at The Guardian. Ewan and his team share the Pulitzer Prize for public service for their coverage of information disclosed by whistleblower Edward Snowden. Ewan McCaskill.
I was at the Belmarsh Tribunal in London, but I think it's more important to be at this one in Washington, because this is where the story is really going to happen. From 2007 to 2013, I was the Guardian's Washington Bureau chief. And so I was here in 2010 when this story broke. I wrote some of the stories from the cache of documents that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks provided. I covered the reaction from the White House State Department. There's quite a lot of hostility, particularly on the left in America, towards Julian Assange over what happened in 2016 in the White House elections, because this extradition has nothing to do with 2016 in Russia. If not for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and Chelsea Manning, we wouldn't have known about the Apache attack in Iraq. Up until that point, we didn't really know what was happening in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, at least not in a realistic way. Those war logs provided an account of how the US and its allies were losing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, contrary to the public line that they were actually winning them. That's akin to what Daniel Ellsberg did with the Pentagon Papers in the 1970s over Vietnam. But there's very little coverage in the UK press on Assange. The idea that a journalist publisher could be in a high security jail and nobody's paying much attention seems almost inconceivable to me. But it's almost never reported. Apart from when he was first arrested and taken to Belmarsh, there's been very little reporting. There's not much reporting in the US as, either. There's exceptions like Ryan, and the New York Times published an editorial in support of Assange in conjunction with The Guardian, Le Monde, and others. But these are rare events. You hardly ever hear anything in the States about Assange. But he will be extradited. I'm pretty sure he will. I know the way the UK courts work is politically motivated. That court will agree to the extradition of Assange. The UK is so close to the US, they're reliant on intelligence sharing. So when the US asks for something from the UK, they nearly always comply. So I mean, the chances are that Assange is going to come back here. Then it will be a big story, and people will be all over it. They'll be talking about press freedom. And if you're going to influence this, you need journalists to be writing about it already. You need US journalists to be putting in freedom of information requests. You need journalists in America tapping their sources in the White House or State Department or the Justice Department and doing stories. You need activists writing to the members of Congress. You need to sort of generate some sort of buzz around this story. I said that in 2010, I went to the State Department and Hillary the day the first of the cables were released, and Hillary Clinton was sort of visibly annoyed and angry and said it was an attack on the international community. Joe Biden, who was then vice president, described Assange as a high-tech terrorist. There's no reason to think that Biden has necessarily changed his view. But it's coming up to an election year, and you've got to wonder, unless there's pressure on him, he can just ignore this, but if there's pressure on him, then he might think, I've enough concerns in the election year to avoid being sidetracked by something like a freedom of the press argument. So if the people in this room and the people watching were to engage in pressure on their members of Congress, try to get journalists' interest, then that's the best thing that could happen for Assange.
So, Harvey, a couple of things there that I want to emphasize. First of all, for anybody listening, this thing with Assange is not about 2016. It's about 2010. There's so many people, especially uninformed Democrats, that are still kind of, you know, when they can't blame Bernie, they're going to blame Assange for giving the election or taking the election away from Hillary. And then the other thing is just the lack of press coverage.
Oh, I know. I came out with a statement defending him a few months ago, you know, the Post, the Times, and a couple of the European papers. For years of nothing. And then you haven't heard a word from him since.
No.
Well, I think the media is going to, if he is extradited, the government and the media, which are going to have the same message, obviously, are going to make it all about Julian Assange. And it's not about Julian Assange.
No. One of the things that the British asked the United States to promise was that Julian Assange, if they extradited him, would never go into solitary confinement. And so who brought up solitary confinement but John Kiriakou?
Our next witness at the tribunal is John Kiriakou. He's a journalist, whistleblower, and former intelligence officer for the CIA. After leaving the CIA, Kiriakou became the first former CIA officer to confirm that the agency waterboarded detainees in the course of its so-called war on terror. In 2012, Kiriakou became the first CIA officer to be convicted of disclosing classified information and the only CIA agent to go to jail in connection with the U.S. torture program.
Amy said something very important, I think, in her introductory comments, and that is that Julian most likely will be extradited sooner rather than later. And I want to talk about that because I think we should hope for the best but prepare for the worst. So in preparation for the worst, let's talk about solitary confinement. First, I want to say unequivocally that the Justice Department is lying to everybody. Everybody. It is not up to the prosecutors to decide who goes to solitary and who doesn't. That is the sole discretion of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and never the two shall meet. So prosecutors can tell Julian's attorneys all they want. We promise he won't be put in solitary. We promise he won't be put in a communications management unit. Those are empty promises. So let's talk about solitary confinement. Believe it or not, solitary confinement as a punishment was invented in the United States of America. In 1829, the government built a facility in Philadelphia called the Eastern State Penitentiary. And the idea was that if you take a criminal and put him in a 6-foot by 10-foot cell with a bed, a chair, a bedpan, and a Bible, and no human contact, he'll spend all of his time reading the Bible, and he'll come out as a reformed and good human being. But instead, everybody went insane. And we never learned a lesson from that experience. I want to share with you the words of just a few people who have spent time in solitary. Before I give you their words, I want to remind you that the United Nations has declared the U.S. practice of using solitary as a punishment to be a form of torture. That's from the United Nations. It's not from John. It's a form of torture. Anything longer than 15 days is a form of torture. But in this country, we keep people in solitary confinement for currently as long as 44 years. Can you imagine 44 years with no human contact? First, I want to tell you about Cesar Villa. He is currently a prisoner in the Pelican Bay State Prison in California. He wrote this recently, following his 12th year in solitary confinement. He said, "Nothing can really prepare you for entering solitary. It's a world unto itself where cold, quiet, and emptiness come together, seeping into your bones and then eventually into your mind. The first week I told myself, this isn't so bad, I can do this. The second week I stood outside in my underwear, shivering as I was pelted with hail and rain. By the third week, I found myself squatting in a corner of the yard, filing my fingernails down over concrete walls. My sense of human decency dissipated with each day. At the end of the first year, my feet and hands were split open from the cold. I bled all over my clothes, my food, between my sheets. My sense of normalcy began to wane, although I didn't realize it at the time. Looking back now, that's when my mental unraveling must have begun. My psyche had changed. I had gone insane. I would never be the same. That is what the plan is for Julian Assange. They tell you, no, no, no. We're not going to put him. We promise we won't put him in solitary confinement. So rest assured, they're lying to us, just like they're lying to him. What do we do next? Next is we have to keep fighting. Whether we fight Merrick Garland or Joe Biden, or we fight on the airwaves to try to influence the jury, the fight really has just begun.
And he goes on and he has several more words from the prisoners who were in solitary confinement. So I recommend that you, everybody go to the full thing and listen, because they're equally horrific as far as what Julian Assange will be facing. After that, Harvey, we have Abby Martin, who is always just in your face.
We turn now to the next witness at the Belmarsh Tribunal, Abby Martin, investigative journalist, host of The Empire Files, an independent documentary and interview series reporting on conflicts, repression, and the future of the First Amendment. She's been active as an editor and international journalist for more than a decade, published several books and directed several movies, most recently Gaza Fights for Freedom.
The past 8 weeks have been the deadliest on record for journalists, with 60 confirmed killed in Gaza so far. They are being targeted for assassination, many alongside their entire families. The reporters who remain say that their press vests, which should be their protective barrier from bombs and bullets, are actually what is marking them for murder. The genocide in Gaza has been exposed by these heroes. The only way the world knows the depth of crimes committed by the U.S. and Israel, things that would otherwise remain hidden for years, is because journalists are able to document them on their phones and instantly upload them for the world to see. The Iraqi people did not have the capacity to film their reality when a crime of this scale was being committed to them. Iraqis didn't have social media, but they did have WikiLeaks, which finally showed the world what American forces had kept hidden for so long. Washington worked very hard to control where journalists could access and what they could and could not report. WikiLeaks was the antidote for that lack of free press during what was the greatest atrocity in the modern era. The Iraq war logs forced Americans to confront what the United States was doing in our names. They gave proof to Iraqi society the extent to which U.S. soldiers had been killing civilians. And the revelations made the occupation untenable. Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange helped end the Iraq war. Forgive the repetition, but I think this quote bears repeating. Julian Assange once declared that if wars can start with lies, peace can start with the truth. Those words ring as our beacon when we look at the threat that truth poses to power, the powers that decide who lives and who dies, how wars start and how wars end. Truth poses the ultimate threat, indeed. It gives the peons the power to know and the agency to act. That's why Julian Assange is deemed enemy number one. Let's turn to Gaza once again, where not only journalists, but Palestinians who become viral, like our great late friend Rifat Alarer, are openly assassinated. Openly assassinated for exposing Israel's crimes. Let's not forget the CIA tried to do the exact same thing to Julian Assange. They wanted to kill him for the same reason that Israel is killing Palestinian journalists. But America is not as brazen as Israel and needs to maintain this veneer of respectability, humanitarianism, and democracy. So instead, they chose a different means to the same end. Silencing him, punishing him, and taking away his life by throwing him in a dungeon. And they relied on the willing agents of empire, the dutiful media stenographers, to articulate to us why Assange is not a journalist and persecute him at the stake. Assange has been in prison for so long, it actually might be hard to remember what it was like when WikiLeaks came out. It's hard to remember how much of a relief it was to witness an organization braving the truth, armed with proof, a figurehead that challenged power in such a superb way. Remember what an exciting moment that was? A triumph of public interest journalism, which was finally shining a spotlight on the crimes the Pentagon was committing in the shadows. WikiLeaks was celebrated as the important public service that it was, and Assange was heralded as the heroic leader. Looking back at the legacy of WikiLeaks and how much of its revelations provided a foundational knowledge for the machinations of empire and the state and geopolitics today, I am eternally grateful. We turn to the bloodletting in Gaza. It's because of WikiLeaks that we know about Israel's intent to keep Gaza's economy on the brink of collapse, its people teetering above humanitarian crisis. We can thank WikiLeaks for revealing the strategy of wanting Hamas to govern the Gaza Strip so they can deem 2.3 million civilians there a hostile entity worthy of collective punishment, and as we've seen plainly today, death. We've all seen how the U.S. government prosecutes whistleblowers with extreme prejudice. No one embarrasses them without paying dearly in prison. But Assange's case took the state's vengeful prosecution to a new and extremely dangerous level. Assange did not steal or leak any government secrets. He never committed any crime. He published and exposed the crimes. That's why the Espionage Act was enacted over 100 years ago, to prevent the interference in the war effort. As President Woodrow Wilson stated when he oversaw the creation of this archaic and draconian law, such creatures of passion, disloyalty, and anarchy must be crushed out. The case against Assange is unprecedented. It breaks new legal ground that has profound implications for not just every journalist, but every citizen. This case criminalizes journalism. It criminalizes dissent. What's happening to Julian Assange will have a chilling effect that will resonate for generations. This is what will happen to you if you try to replicate Assange's work. This too can be your fate if you dare to challenge us. And let's remember, the U.S. government has no credibility on this issue. They weaponize the notion of a free press to only ostracize, sanction, and try to kill their enemies, take down governments, while their closest enemies are the most horrific on freedom of the press: Saudi Arabia, Uganda, Israel. How can we trust an institution like this to tell us who is a journalist and who is not? Who is worthy of doing journalism? How is it acceptable that the perpetrators of the illegal invasion of Iraq are the ones who get to decide if the man who exposed their crimes is a journalist? We cannot let a conflict of interest of this magnitude prevail. Julian Assange is the voice of the people, and we must free him. Thank you.
As typical, Abby is kicking ass.
Yep.
Biden needs to do the right thing now, and somebody else is going to say this along the line, but Biden needs to do the right thing now, or not only are other countries going to run with it, but Trump is really going to run with it.
He's carrying on Trump's project right now.
What?
You heard a word from him?
Obama?
Yeah.
I haven't heard a word from him.
He's the one who decided not to prosecute.
I think so. Yeah, he did decide not to prosecute because Trump was the one who decided to prosecute.
I know, even though he was Obama's vice president.
The next guy, Mark Feldstein, was really good. And once again, for those who are just tuning in or whatever, Harvey and I are sharing portions of Belmarsh Tribunal, which was sponsored by and aired by Democracy Now! And by The Intercept. So here's another witness, as they call him.
Now to our next witness, the legendary investigative reporter Mark Feldstein, currently holds the Richard Eaton Chair of Broadcast Journalism at the University of Maryland.
The prosecution of Julian Assange is unprecedented in American history. Publishing state secrets is not unprecedented. That's common. It's been going on thousands upon thousands of times since the 1790s. But never before has a publisher been thrown in prison for what he published. After September 11th, the government escalated prosecution of whistleblowers, the leakers, but never the journalists who published the information. That was seen as protected by the First Amendment and its clause protecting freedom of the press. This was known as the reporter-source divide, And so the Obama administration, which didn't like the leaks any more than other administrations, prosecuted Chelsea Manning for these leaks, but not Julian Assange because of the First Amendment. That changed under Donald Trump. His administration administered a new and dangerous legal theory using the espionage laws to imprison people for publishing true information about government abuses. If you look at the indictment, it targets news gathering and publishing by itself as an act. 9 counts of what they call unauthorized disclosure of national defense information. That's publishing. 7 counts of unauthorized obtaining or receiving of this information. That's news gathering. In fact, they say, quote, that Assange, quote, explicitly solicited restricted material of political, diplomatic, or ethical significance precisely because of the value of that information. That's what journalists do. That's what I teach my journalism students to do. Even a top-level national security official from the Bush administration, Jack Goldsmith, said that this was obviously framed to mirror what journalists do. It's not an accident. This is an attempt to criminalize investigative reporting, to criminalize national security journalism. And Julian Assange is the perfect defendant from the government's standpoint because he's so unpopular. It's easier to convict him as a publisher than the publisher of the New York Times, which also published this information, even as it opens the door to doing just that. This case is about more than Julian Assange or journalism. It's about the right of the citizens to get the information they need to participate in a democracy, to know what's being done by the government in our name with our tax dollars. It was a Republican congressman, Rand Paul, who said of this case, "In a free society, we are supposed to know the truth. In a society where truth becomes treason, we are all in trouble."
So that was Mark Feldstein. In a very short time, I think he put together a lot of really troubling information. So the next clip we have is Ben Wisner.
Our next witness at today's tribunal is Ben Wisner, lawyer, civil liberties advocate with the American Civil Liberties Union. Since July of 2013, he's been the lead attorney for NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. He's also an adjunct professor at the New York University School of Law. Ben.
I want to do something a little bit different with my 4 or 5 minutes today. I want to speak to people who are not in this room and who would not be in this room. To people who would, in fact, disagree with what has been said and will be said today. To people who do not believe that WikiLeaks is one of the world's indispensable journalistic organizations and who regard Julian Assange not as a journalist but as a chaos agent or, worse, a hacker. To people who don't necessarily believe that American empire is the greatest threat to world peace and who see America as largely a force for good in the world. To people who see no connection between the imprisonment of Julian Assange and the vital investigative journalism they read in America's leading newspapers. To people who think Julian Assange should probably be locked up for conduct wholly unrelated to the charges in this case. In short, to most Americans, including almost every member of Congress and almost everyone who holds power in this city. I want to say that if you think that what's happening to Julian Assange has nothing to do with you, that you have no skin in this game, you are wrong. The Washington Post recently, in recent years, unveiled a slogan, "Democracy dies in darkness." It's a little bit grandiose. They've been mocked a bit for it, but can anybody doubt its truth? No government in the world willingly divulges evidence of its own misconduct. Even in democracies, we might say especially in democracies where leaders have to face voters, people in power use every method at their disposal to conceal their misconduct, their scandals, and their crimes. Every important fact we know about our government's crimes, we know because the free press published the government's secrets. The single most important role of the press in a democracy is to dig out the government secrets and to return them to their rightful owners, the public. This prosecution seeks to recharacterize that vital role as a criminal conspiracy. For the first time in our modern history, the government is describing the publication of truthful information as a felony. And if you think the government will do that once and then be satisfied, you're naive about how power works. The threat of prosecution will be in the air every time the government seeks to persuade a newspaper not to publish its classified secrets. And even if you think that's not likely to happen with this president and this attorney general, take a moment to consider who the next president and attorney general might well be. This prosecution could hand a loaded weapon to someone who views our free press as an enemy of the people. Let me close by speaking directly to the Attorney General, though I suspect he does not stream Democracy Now! Or The Intercept. Perhaps this footage or coverage of this footage will make its way to him. We know that this is a prosecution that you would not have initiated. We also know that you're an institutionalist and you don't believe that the government should change its position just because it changes its attorney general. And I think we know that you do not want to have the historic mark of being the first attorney general to set the precedent that publication of truthful information can land journalists and publishers in prison. Julian Assange has been in a maximum security prison for more than 4 years. Under any version of punishment, whatever you think he may have done wrong, enough is enough. And it's possible, indeed it's vital, that we find a way to bring this case to a resolution without setting a precedent that will make this country less free.
Again, harping on this and reemphasizing this, that this Biden has a chance to do something good. Merrick Garland has a chance to do something good that could possibly save the democracy long range. So they can't go down this path.
I wish I believed that, but I'm afraid they're capable of it.
So while we got a second, if you want to send a comment to the Justice Department, it is 202-353-1555. And if you want to go to the main switchboard and try and get a hold of the Attorney General, that is 202-514-2000. He was saying to most of the people who believe Julian Assange culpable of something, they're not looking at this long range. But God, that's so typical of Americans.
You know, the thing is, their strategy all along has been to make it a personal thing about Julian Assange, and then they're going to make him into a person that nobody would like much or trust, and you know, they discredit him. You know, it reminds me of when Edward Snowden was hiding out in Hong Kong with Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras, saying, "I don't want my name because I don't want it to be about me. It's not about me," and they're going to try to make it about me.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to talk about what I've done and what I've discovered and what I'm trying to tell the American people.
So if they make it about Julian Assange and they go ahead with this, then by making it personal, they're going to inadvertently open Pandora's box of saying, okay, now we can go after every journalist because there's the president. Well, the next clip we want to share is from a member of the Veterans for Peace Advisory Board. This is Marjorie Cohn.
Our next tribunal member is Marjorie Cohn. She's a professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. Previously, she was the president of the National Lawyers Guild. Professor Cohn has testified to the House Judiciary Committee and to military courts-martial about the illegality of the wars and the duty to disobey unlawful orders. She is a member of the Bureau of the International Association of Democratic Lawyers.
The indictment against Julian Assange, which was filed by the Trump administration, is based on WikiLeaks' 2010 to 2011 exposure of war crimes committed by the United States. Assange was also indicted for exposing Cablegate. His indictment had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton and the 2016 election. The United States has ratified both the Geneva Conventions and the Convention Against Torture, making the U.S. a party to those treaties. Under the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, treaties are the supreme law of the land. That makes the obligations contained in them part of U.S. domestic law. It means the United States is bound to follow the obligations set forth in those treaties. The collateral murder video reveals evidence of three different violations of the Geneva Conventions and the U.S. Army Field Manual. First, civilians can never be targeted. Second, rescuers can never be targeted. And third, it is forbidden to deface a dead body. WikiLeaks also exposed Cablegate, which consisted of 251,000 confidential U.S. State Department cables that disclosed corruption, diplomatic scandals, and spy affairs on an international scale. A year ago, the New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel, and El País, which also exposed Cablegate, signed a joint open letter calling on the U.S. government to dismiss the Espionage Act charges against Julian Assange for publishing classified and military diplomatic secrets. Publishing is not a crime, the letter states. The U.S. government should end its prosecution of Julian Assange for publishing secrets. Barack Obama's administration, which prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than all prior presidential administrations combined, decided not to indict Julian Assange. That is because of the so-called New York Times problem. That means they would also have had to indict journalists from major news outlets that did the same thing that WikiLeaks did. But rather than dropping Trump's case against Assange consistent with the position of the Obama-Biden administration, Joe Biden has zealously pursued extradition and persecution. It is critical that the Biden administration drop the U.S. demand for extradition and dismiss the indictment against Julian Assange. The integrity of the U.S. government and the survival of freedom of the press require it. Thank you.
Marjorie Cohn, we have Trevor Tim.
Next up is Trevor Tim, co-founder and executive director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. He's the author of Fighting for the Press, the inside story of the Pentagon Papers and other battles. Tim.
Many panelists have already eloquently spoken about the fact that what Julian Assange is accused of is not a rarity in journalism. In fact, it's what journalists from mainstream papers, from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, do almost daily, which is talk to sources about classified information, ask them for more information, and publish that information. In fact, it's written into their job responsibilities. But when you talk to defenders of the Justice Department or spokespeople for the Justice Department, they will often, they are unable to say unequivocally that this will not create a precedent that will allow them to go after those same journalists, but they will say, of course, we would never do that. And so I think it's important to emphasize that this is not just a slippery slope argument or some theoretical exercise. Currently, right now, on the campaign trail, the leading candidate for the Republican Party, Donald Trump, has repeatedly told crowds of thousands of people that he would like to, quote unquote, jail journalists. He has repeatedly on social media talked about how cable news operations are committing, quote unquote, treason for criticizing him and reporting on things that he doesn't like. And just the other day, one of his close allies talked about how in the second Donald Trump administration, he will, quote unquote, go after the media. And so, I would ask anybody within the Justice Department currently, in the Democratic Party, or in charge of the White House. Is there anybody who would love more a precedent set in this Assange case that would allow a future president to go after newspapers like the New York Times and the Washington Post than Donald Trump? After all, it's not WikiLeaks or a WikiLeaks-like outfit that is publishing the most classified information in the United States today. It is those papers that I just named and many other mainstream papers like them. Many people in this room, both the panelists and in the crowd, have done heroic work trying to raise awareness about this case. There, virtually every press freedom organization, including Freedom of the Press Foundation, virtually every civil liberties organization, including ACLU, virtually every human rights organization, including Human Rights Watch and Amnesty, has loudly condemned these charges and asked the Justice Department to drop them. But there is one group of people who can make more of a difference than anybody, and that is the journalists who are in this audience, the journalists who may be watching at home, and their editors and publishers. Now, you might say that journalists don't like to make their opinions known about various issues, whether it's because of, you know, claims of bias or because of the rules inside of their newsrooms. However, we know that this is not the case when we're talking about issues that directly affect their rights. And I want to talk quickly about two examples. When you go back and look at what happened during the Trump administration, when he was out there calling journalists enemies of the people, when he would tweet to his tens of millions of followers by name, naming journalists and calling them every insult in the books, journalists banded together and loudly condemned this behavior, both individually and collectively. They went up to members of Congress and forced them to condemn this behavior and ask them what they were going to do. Now, you can say Trump is impervious to that criticism or even liked that criticism, and so nothing changed. But we do know, actually, that this can work on the Biden administration specifically. I think a lot of people forget that at the beginning, the very beginning of the Biden administration, just in the first month or two, we found out that at the end of the Trump administration, the Justice Department had issued secret legal orders to spy on the email records of journalists at the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN. And even worse still, it seemed like the Biden administration was going to continue fighting to make sure that they got that information from the reporters and the tech companies that held it. Well, as soon as journalists found out about this, there was widespread outrage. Journalists of all stripes, from mainstream news organizations to independent, were loudly condemning this on social media. The next day, I think it was even over the weekend at the White House, they were being peppered with questions. And despite the Biden administration saying that they never want to meddle in individual cases in the Justice Department, which is a noble goal, they almost the next day declared that their administration's policy was they were not going to allow the surveillance of journalists anymore. The Justice Department quickly got this message. By the day after that, they had announced that they too were going to work on instituting rules that would make sure that this would never happen again. And a few months later, they released the strongest rules, internal Justice Department rules, that they've ever had. We know that this can bring change. Now, the problem is that a lot of people journalists are afraid to speak up for Assange. And so time is running out. If Julian Assange comes to this country, it may be too late. And so my message to all those journalists is please tell your followers, tell your bosses, and tell anybody who will listen that this is not just about Julian Assange. It is about your rights and the rights of all your colleagues. Thank you.
That was Trevor Tim. And we really need to take to heart his political ramifications that he brought up. So, Harvey, is there anything else that we possibly should include in the show before we consider a song?
Well, I don't know if you remember Amy's closing comments. Yeah. Maybe we could share some of that.
As our first witness, Ewan McCaskill, was speaking from The Guardian, I looked up a piece that was in The Guardian a couple of years ago. Senior CIA officials during the Trump administration discussed abducting and even assassinating WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, according to a U.S. report citing former officials. The discussions on kidnapping or killing Assange took place in 2017, according to Yahoo News, when the fugitive Australian activist was entering his fifth year sheltering in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. The then CIA director, Mike Pompeo, and his top officials were furious about WikiLeaks' publication of Vault 7, a set of CIA hacking tools, a breach in which the agency deemed to be the biggest data loss in its history. Pompeo and the CIA leadership, quote, were completely detached from reality because they were so embarrassed about Vault 7. Yahoo cites a former Trump national security official as saying they were seeing blood. Some senior officials inside the CIA and the Trump administration went as far as to request sketches or options for killing Assange. There seemed to be no boundaries, a former senior counterterrorist official was quoted as saying. The kidnapping or murder of a civilian accused of publishing leaked documents with no connection to terrorism would have triggered global outrage. Pompeo raised eyebrows in 2017 by referring to WikiLeaks as a, quote, non-state hostile intelligence service. The Yahoo report said it was a significant designation as it implied a green light for a more aggressive approach to the pro-transparency group by CIA operatives who could treat it as an enemy espionage organization. This is the background for where Julian Assange is today. In 2012, he got political asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Think about that. That was more than 10 years ago that he has not been able to enjoy freedom. It's clear that the authorities are not simply going to change their minds. It's up to movements making demands of the top. It's movements that make history. It is all of you. It is up to all of you that is the only possibility of making the difference. Our motto at Democracy Now! Is go to where the silence is and say something. It is so critical that happened today. You can take those links at Democracy Now! And spread them far and wide. If each person sent this to 10 or 20 people or to whole organizations, this is what makes the difference. That motto should be the Hippocratic Oath of not only journalists today, but of all people of conscience. We will not be silent. Democracy Now!
So don't be silent. Call your congressperson and say, tell the Justice Department to drop the charges against Julian Assange. And then here's a number for the Justice Department, 202-353-1555. And then the main switchboard is 202-514-2000.
I think this is also something else that the good old letter to the editor might be. People who read the letters to the editor are usually people who have some interest in what's going on
and take action.
Might do something.
So what do you want to do for a song? Do you have an idea?
And Harvey did have an idea. Here is Public Enemy with Fight the Power.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
You're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing.
Hey!
Giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing. While the black band's sweating. In the rhythm, I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Hey!
Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be.
guitar.